As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's KJ Carson on WEEI. WEEI.
Who do the Patriots end up taking there with the fourth overall pick?
It's Will Campbell. I've made my case against why I wouldn't do it, but he checks a lot of needs for them. And then the hope is that you'll start him in left tackle and that he proves he belongs there. And if you talk to people who are being realistic, I don't think people really want to tell you. His tape last year wasn't that great. Like, I'm not talking bad, but I'm not talking top four pick in the draft good. It's just something that people have kind of glossed over, because they like the player and they like, obviously there's a need here. So pump them up as much as you can.
KJWEEI, good Sunday to you. Happy Easter. If you celebrate, we'll have an extended show today. I don't know if management decided this in dark rooms, give KJ another hour. I don't know. Maybe the Bruins hijacked the entire season. Hence, there's no more Sunday skate, because if there was playoffs, there'd be another Sunday skate. So I'm here with you till 10. The draft is this week. You know, all our NFL netty nerds, you know, we'll have their fill on Thursday. And, of course, WEEI will be there. I think it's Hart and Johnson will be out in Green Bay. Can I say this? All right, it's kind of cool that the NFL wants to move around the draft to different places. But Green Bay, come on, I mean, the accommodations. Look, nothing against the good people of Wisconsin. My godmother lives at the very northern part of it at the Michigan line. But it's all still the same once you go all the way up there. You know, like, have it in Milwaukee where at least we can go get some decent food. But it should be exciting because, obviously, with the Patriots at number four, there's a lot of discussion of, is Will Campbell the guy? Now, again, going into the season, even think about last season, right? At the start of last season, I'm talking about the year before. This is when Drake May was still in his last year of college. Remember, it was, hey, it was either you take Drake May or Caleb Williams, 1-2. And things change over the course of the season, and I think something has kind of happened similar with Will Campbell, where with Will Campbell, at the beginning of, you know, all this season of draft talk, it's like, oh, surefire, can't miss, they need a left tackle. Then you started hearing the stuff about the arms, and this is where we get into the NFL netty nerd stuff, like, is his arms too short to stop a defensive lineman? Yeah, he shows great on, maybe his tape isn't so great. Do you take the best person available? What do you do when you get to number four if you're the Patriots, if you're not in love with Will Campbell? I think we're at the point where I don't think there's a consensus that people are in love with Will Campbell at four for the Patriots, okay? So, of course, there's been the two options theory you've heard, right? If Hunter or Carter is available at four, no-brainer, take them. I agree on one part, disagree on another. Or you trade the number four pick, and what you get in return for it will be able to get more assets that the team needs, and you could still probably get either Campbell a little bit later. I think it may be Banks, but I'll get to that shortly. Part is, as well as Elliott Wolf did in free agency, because I said if Elliott Wolf swung and missed in free agency, and let's just call it what it is, Stephon Diggs is the rescue. It's the kick save and the beauty for the offensive situation for the Patriots, right? Because at least you know that Stephon Diggs' production in seven games was pretty much the equivalent to all of the production for all the receiving core for the Patriots last year. So you feel good about that. But where I thought there was a mini swing and a miss, call it a, in a baseball reference, a foul tip into the mitt, was not being able to get on the deal for Larry Tunsil or try and get make a deal for a left tackle so that way there would be no question of the left tackle situation when you got to the draft. And you could probably be a better wheeler and dealer player at four, knowing that, hey, what everybody knows we need, we don't need. But yet here we are, where I think part of the consensus, I would probably say if you took a poll of people, 617-779-7937, that's the telephone number and the text number, is I would probably say 60% of Patriots fans would say at four and Carter and Hunter are not available, trade the pick. The question is who wants to jump up to four to get what they need done? Like who feels there's such a desperation that they need to jump up to the top five to get something they desperately need? New Orleans, right? But here's the thing with the New Orleans story, right? Derek Carr seemed to hurt this shoulder during non-football contact, right? Like there was nothing at the end of the season. No one's ever told us or you've heard how the shoulder was hurt. You've seen no replay or film of how this, you just, hey, hurt his shoulder. He could be out the whole season. Really? Was him and Chris Sale, you know, riding along the carriageway off a Heartbreak Hill together? What happened? You know, that's why I'm kind of like, is New Orleans playing the injured hurt dog hollers, we need a quarterback, to try and negotiate to get to four with the Patriots to, watch this, get the local kid, Will Campbell, to be Derek Carr's left side protection? And if you ask me, what would the Saints' ultimate goal be? Tank for Archie. I think they're trying to set themselves up to be able to get Archie Manning next year in the draft as their QB. So my question would be, why would they take Shedeur Sanders this year when they can get the marketing kid whose father played for the team and his uncle is in the Hall of Fame and his dad was pretty good at what he played at and his other uncle, they're all from Louisiana. Why would you not tank for Archie Manning? So this is why I kind of debunked the Seattle. The Saints are desperate to get up to four to get Shedeur Sanders. So I'm not buying the Derek Carr story. I'm not buying the shoulder stuff. Again, I'm trying to go through, if the Patriots do give up this fourth pick, where does that fourth pick go to, and what do you kind of get in return? The other team that's desperate to probably get to that point, but I think their status is just too short, their arms are too short, literally, would be the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Like, this would be the team that says, okay, if we sit around and wait for, watch this, Aaron Rodgers to make a decision about what he wants to do, we have no quarterback here. The last time we took a quarterback around 21, we got rid of him within 21 games. So Pittsburgh could be this team, but they just, you feel like there's no way the Patriots say, yeah, we'll swap four for 21. Now, you could have done this if you gotten the left tackle in free agency, right? Because if you say, hey, we take four for your 21, give us your number one next year, your number two the year after that. Like, you can kind of raid the refrigerator with Pittsburgh because they desperately need a quarterback in there. So what happens at four, KJ? I think they trade the pick. And I think it's New Orleans. And because, now, again, here's what I will say about these simulators that are absolutely hilarious. And it happened in this particular first one that I did. In this simulator, the Saints came to me with a deal, right? 4 for 9. This makes a lot of sense. This is what they were talking about, right? So I did the deal. I gave them the four for their ninth, their 184th, and a fourth rounder in 2026. But guess who the simulator took at four, Brian? For Zuko, thanks for being here. Guess who they took at four?
Who'd they take?
They took Will Campbell. Which now makes total, like, when I saw that, I was like, this makes a lot of sense, right? Like, what if Derek Carr really, really isn't hurt? Would you not want to probably go get the local guy, get him developed with a bad team at left tackle protecting Derek Carr, and then with a team that's probably with about four wins, maybe five, maybe too many, you start making the move to tank for Archie Manning. For Arch, well, yeah, I don't know if it's Arch Manning. Yeah, it's Arch Manning because his grandfather's Archie. So literally, Archie Manning, who was the very first quarterback in the history of the Saints franchise, he's not the very first. He was their first superstar. Gary Kwazo, I think, was the first quarterback of the New Orleans Saints. You're like, KJ, how do you know this stuff? I was like, well, because I know Mr. Kwazo. He was a dentist in my town. But to get Arch Manning with the Saints, I think, is their ultimate goal, not Shedeur Sanders. Who else is desperate for a quarterback, you say? I say, look at the teams that went out of their way to sign somebody for like a one-year deal. Like, think Jacoby Brissett last year, right? When you sign a veteran quarterback for a one-year deal, I've said here on this station, that quarterback, as soon as they hit practice, it's the end. It's the beginning of the end with them for that team because there's somebody who is in waiting. And I've said here, and those who've been up this early on a Sunday morning, thank you and thank God for you, is that do not sleep on Cleveland still going to get Shedeur Sanders. KJ, you're crazy, this, that. Now, watch this. You've got Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Mr. Gloves, who I just told you they got rid of in less than 21 games in Pittsburgh. He's not part of the ultimate plan. Don't buy Kirk Cousins. If Kirk Cousins couldn't get it done indoors, you think he's going to be able to get it done in Cleveland? So he's not going to leave it. Atlanta's going to want what I wanted the Patriots to do with Joe Milton is wait for the preseason to develop. Wait for some calamity to happen, and you can get more than the value of the return. That's why I thought if you kept Joe Milton rounder, if you turned around and just said, hey, just let the preseason play out. Let him show, let him flash, let somebody else get hurt somewhere else. If that happens, you get better than what you got in return. I mean, did you get a cheeseburger for him from Dallas? Joe Flacco's not the final answer for Cleveland. So like, well, they got Deshaun Watson. Well, Deshaun Watson is going to be coming off of an injury, and he's still owed about $110 million on his contract. But it's only 2 years remaining. Now is the time to go get the rookie quarterback and say, all right, if you're behind Joe Flacco, pro-style guy, Shedeur Sanders is more of a pro-style guy. You know, it's kind of funny. You're like, oh, he's a scrambler. No, Shedeur Sanders is not a big-time scrambler or anything like that. He's a pocket guy. So him behind a Joe Flacco would make a lot of sense. While Deshaun Watson, they just eat up that contract. Look, if it's only 2 years they've got to do, and you can get a rookie quarterback in there within the next 2 years, you've got that rookie quarterback under control. And guess what that does? If Cleveland does take Shedeur Sanders, watch this. It either makes Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter available at four, which would change everything. So I'll tell you what, next, I'll give you my mock draft of what happened when I gave my pick to nine, and then another draft, and I'm not going to go deep into it, when San Francisco reached out and offered me some stuff. 617-779-7937, KJWEEI. Now it's time to trend with Brian Rizzuto.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. Celtics title defense begins today as Boston takes on the Orlando Magic for Game 1 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals. Today with tip-off from the Garden at 3:30. Other games today include, the Thunder hosting the Grizzlies at 1 o'clock, the Heat visiting the number one seeded Cavaliers at 7, and the day wraps up with Steph Curry and the Warriors visiting Houston to take on the Rockets. The NBA playoffs got underway for 8 other teams yesterday, with the Pacers taking Game 1 over the Bucks, Nuggets winning in overtime against the Clippers, you're the Knicks securing an 11-point win over the Pistons at Madison Square Garden, and the surprise of the day with the Timberwolves beating LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and the Lakers in LA 117-105. Garrett Crochet struck out 7, Tristan Cavaliers Piazza's played the role of the hero yesterday as he walked off the White Sox in extra innings to help give the Red Sox their fourth straight win. Game 3 of this four-game series is today with first pitch from Fenway Park scheduled for 1:35, and we will have the call of that game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Pre-game starts at 12:35 with the MassMutual pregame show hosted by our very own Dan Ball. The NHL playoffs got underway yesterday with a pair of Game 1s. President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets took down the Blues 5-3, and the Avalanche steamrolled the Stars in Dallas by a score of 5-1. Three more games take place today, with the Devils visiting the Hurricanes at 3 o'clock. You have the Senators facing the Maple Leafs at 7 o'clock, and the late game has the Wild in Vegas taking on old friend Bruce Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights. That's what's trending on WEI and WEI.com. I'm Brian Frazoco. More KJ Carson coming up after this.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. It's KJ Carson on WEEI.
You say the name Bill Russell as the name. It's really hard to find words that kind of represent someone whose presence was so large.
Bill Russell was a great man. During a peak of racial tension in our society, he represented a type of nobility and honor that transcended sports.
It's a lot of things that have happened that have led to the systemic inequality that Bill Russell spoke to. From someone coming from almost two generations away, just how it's impacted me.
Good Sunday to you. KJWEEI, good Sunday to you. Thank you so much for being here. 617-779-7937. If you've not caught up on Celtic City in 10 minutes, well, the great thing about it is there's no spoiler because we're all living right now, so, you know, we kind of know these things that have happened. But episode 7, I've got to share a personal story of some behind-the-scenes stuff when Paul Pierce was stabbed back in 2000. These are personal story I have to share. That's coming in 10 minutes. Celtic City, and of course, the Celtics getting ready to defend and going for number 19 today against Orlando at the Garden. If you're just joining me, been talking about the NFL draft this week in Green Bay. Could have picked a better venue. Like, even Jacksonville, you would feel like, okay, at least I can go sit at a tiki bar when, you know, during my off time and just kind of kick back and at least look at some water. I mean, there are some places in the NFL you're just like, really? We're gonna do the draft there? Like Buffalo? You want to be in, like, when they, because, you know, Buffalo's going to ask for it. Buffalo, you want to be in Buffalo? What are we doing? We hang out at Rick James' house? Go drive by Rick James' house? So, two things that I put forward. One, do not sleep on Cleveland's fact that they need a quarterback and how they may have tipped their hand that they could take Shedeur Sanders is that they signed Joe Flacco to a one-year deal. Yeah, forget that Kenny Pickett's on the team. Like, that doesn't even count. That's leverage. And with Deshaun Watson sitting there with about $110 million left to go, this is the time to go get the rookie quarterback. You do not go and get someone like a Kirk Cousins who's going to ask for his Kirk Cousins money. You want to do that as you're just getting off of Deshaun Watson? This would be the time to do that. That's one scenario. And in that, I would ask you, if Shedeur does go to Cleveland, like, who, if you're the Patriots, who do you take it for? Carter, Hunter, if one of those two are available, Will Campbell, or do you trade? The other scenario has, Shedeur Sanders not in the mix, and that maybe the Saints take him. And here's what's interesting: when I told you that the Saints offered me the Patriots in my mock draft, their ninth, their 184th, their fourth rounder in 2026, and they take Will Campbell instead of Shedeur Sanders at 4. Like, damn it, I've been had. Those silly kids. So it leaves me like struggling to take Membu at 9, and I don't want to do this. I'm thinking like, oh gosh, it still doesn't address the left side. He's only played the right side. So I kind of got played in that draft, but I did take Trigg Harris out of Ole Miss at number 2 in my second pick in the second round. I was able to get the edge rusher Tumalo from Ohio State And then Tate Ratledge from Georgia, Josh Farmer from Ohio State, or Florida State, Jalen Travis, the offensive tackle from Iowa State, R.J. Harvey, the running back out of University of Central Florida, because I think Josh McDaniels is going to be able to put his hands on this pick. I think he's looking for the next James White. Cody Simon from the linebacker from Ohio State, because here's the thing that I think where Vrabel does offer some type of advantage. If he's able to get some of these studs out of Ohio State, he's going to be able, he already knows them because he was a consultant for them. He hasn't been too distant from the program. Even when he was a consultant for the Browns last year, he's right there in Cleveland, just a skip and throw away from Columbus. Caden Pricksworn from Ole Miss, the tight end, and then Phil Maffa is the last pick, the running back out of Clemson, because I think you really have to address the running back room with the 1-2 punch of it. But then San Francisco, I did another mock, and you're like, okay, John Lyons, you're doing all these mocks here. I did another mock, and let me tell you, this was fascinating. It came from San Francisco, where I exchanged the 4 for the 13 and got another haul, and then got more hauls from the Panthers. Like, Panthers gave me like 111 and 114. And then I lost the draft when I skipped. Have you ever done that, Brian? You hit the wrong tab, and you're like, oh God.
And you just lose everything.
I just lost my whole damn draft. So trying to best reconstruct it at 13 in this particular mock, the trade, was able to get Kelvin Banks Jr. from Texas at 13, Trey Harris at 38, Travion Henderson from Ohio State at running back.
I like him a lot.
Okay, so this now really puts the pressure on Ramondre Stevenson, because I think that's the other underbelly story that some of us have talked about, but is really what needs to be talked about. Because if Drake May is going to be successful with still kind of a scantily clad receiver room. Stephon Diggs, don't get me wrong, but the rest of the room brings a high B to probably a low C, okay? You're going to need the running game for the play action to make some of these C-minus receivers look like C-pluses. And if the running game is not there, then the passing game is just going to struggle. You're going to see just a lot of Hunter Henry all over again. And then Anthony Belton, the offensive tackle from NC State, he's taken somewhere in there. Some of these get mixed around. I'm trying to reconstruct this, so bear with me. Deontay Henderson, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. Cody Simon again. Aronde Gatson, the second out of Syracuse at tight end. Isaiah Bond was available like in the 180s. I do a deal for a guy named Carson Vinson, an offensive tackle out of Alabama A&M. This is towards the end of the draft. And then Phil Maffa from Clemson at the end of the draft at 238, somewhere in there. And you also have San Francisco's 2026 second round pick. So the second one that I did, the one that I lost to the computer, I immediately text John Lyons. I was like, John, you will not believe what I put together. Because now you've got a lot of young players, guys who you believe can take to Vrabel's philosophy, and you get the offensive tackle that you weren't able to get. Now, again, what is my firm and top-level belief? That if Carter is at 4, that's who you go and get because of two things. One, the pressure will not be on him to carry the weight of the entire team on his shoulders. That's not going to be on him. Like, imagine saying, we can mix Abdul Carter into this defense that seems to have gotten repaired pretty well. Like, if you know that you're not going to put up a bunch of points, the good thing is if you can get a bunch of stops and shorten the field for a young quarterback in a team that doesn't really have a lot of extremely sexy pieces, that is a recipe for success, and I would say immediate success. I'm not going to go crazy and say, hey, this is a 12-win team, but this would be a team that, hey, on the final game of the season, you're going to be doing some scoreboard watching. And last year, look, the last 2 years, on the very last game at home, what were we watching? Year one, Belichick just going out in a limp. Year two, Jerod Mayo stinking it up and losing the first round pick. That's what you've watched the last week of the seasons. So if this season, at the very last game of the season, where you're looking up the scoreboard to see how somebody else is doing, that's exciting at this point. So trade down if Campbell is there. And someone might say, well, is it the short arms or anything like that? It's like, it really comes down to like, look, if you're not in love with the player, and I don't know if anybody's in love with the player, and the team is not going to show their hand and say, you know, we're in love with the player. I don't know if Will Campbell is the final answer, and he would have the weight of the entire team on his shoulders. So if you're worried about short arms, I'm thinking about like how them traps looking. Because if you can't pick it up, oh boy. 617-779-7937, KJ on your Easter Sunday. And for those who don't necessarily celebrate, coming up, is KJ smoking or is he cooking? Because you know today's another day. Let's go to Jay, calling up from North Carolina, down in North Carolina. Jay, thanks so much for calling WEEI. Good Sunday to you.
Good Sunday to you, too. So the lunch pail crew working on a Sunday.
There
good
you enough. Go.
Hey, look, I think I would like to see four sumo wrestlers on the offensive line with two super fast tackles on either side and a good tight end. But the thing is, in all seriousness, if they take their draft pick and draft down, you've got a lot of holes to plug. Mm. But I'm really high on protecting Drake May because he is the franchise of the Patriots. And that's all I got to say about that. Thanks, hey, guys. Have a good Sunday.
Yeah, you too, Jay. Thank you so much. Yeah, obviously that's object number one. But my concern would be, let's say you get Will Campbell and there's a struggle. Because keep in mind, you hear people talk about this name, Tony Mandridge. Brian, have you ever heard people refer to Tony Mandridge?
I have. It was a little before my time, but yeah, when they speak of him, it's not very highly.
Well, it's around the time where I was like, you know, like, hey, okay, this is, you know, there's a time in life where you're like, you know, like kind of kissing girls is kind of a little more fun than watching sports. So that was during that time when I was starting to say, girls or be a sports nerd my whole life. I don't feel the same way when I watch a football game. But Tony Mandridge was was probably still to this day, the biggest can't miss offensive lineman. I think he had Kemp Cup at Michigan State. I mean, like the term pancake was Tony Mandridge. This guy could not miss. Could not miss. In fact, I think if you didn't take Tony Mandridge, if you couldn't get Tony Mandridge, I think like Derek Thomas, who passed away, played for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think posthumously they put him in the Hall of Fame, or there's been consideration. I can't remember. But Derek Thomas, as great as he was not more important than Tony Mandridge. Tony Mandridge could not get it done. Couldn't. I mean, people use Ryan Leaf's name as a bust. No, Ryan Leaf was in a bad situation. Tony Mandridge turned out that he just was not an NFL player. And that is the concern I would have when you roll your dice with a left tackle and say, oh, man, it ain't working out. Let me put it in perspective, Brian. Let me put it in perspective. Joe Alt, who I think will end up being a generational talent.
He looked good last year.
What position is he currently playing in the NFL right now?
I believe he's the right tackle.
He's the right tackle. As great as that guy is going to be. They still haven't put him at left tackle, even though they've got an all-pro at left tackle. But one would say, if this guy's going to be as great as one is going to be, you could always let the high-paid guy go to free agency or get some draft in return or trade him to the Patriots. They need a left tackle. When it comes to left tackle in the NFL, it is better to go with what is proven then find out that the unproven can't prove themselves. Right tackle, you can kind of get away with it unless you're like Miami or you have a left-handed quarterback, right? But look at Tua. That's not to laugh at. But right tackle matters if you've got a left-handed quarterback. That's the blind side. But that left tackle, you got to be 100% sure. So in love. Let's say Joe Alt was available at 4 this year. No question. You would not hear me talking about Abdul Carter. You would not hear me talking about any other. No drafting down. None of that stuff. I would be like, Joe Alt is the generational talent. You believe because there's a pedigree there. And that's another thing as well. You know, Joe Alt's father was, watch this, an offensive tackle for the Chiefs for many years. Played against Hall of Famers, right? Like if Willie Rofe or Will Shields can look at your technique when you're a little kid as you're standing in the backyard after dinner, You're getting the best. You're getting some better teaching than what you're going to get for the from high school, from college, and maybe your first 2-3 years of the pros. You've got a pedigree in there. I'm not going to get on Will Campbell about his arms because, look, if it's a measurement that they take, it must mean something, right? I mean, there's a reason why here in Massachusetts they want us to have license plates on the front and the back. Every place else doesn't, but here we do. There's got to be a reason for it. Probably just a way to double tax you. Can we save money on our taxes and time at the RMV just by just get one plate and get out of here? So there's a reason why arm length is being discussed. Now, the coaches, if you ask a coach straight up, does arm length matter? They're going to tell you no. But why is it measured then? It has to mean for something. I don't know if it matters because I'm not that deep in the woods. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not. But if it doesn't, if you get Will Campbell, the weight of the entire team is on his shoulders. And then I'm not even talking about the media portion. I mean, why? What if he gets beat badly 3 times? With Von Miller just coming going. Now you got to sit in front of the press. Can you protect the quarterback? Are you this bust? When will you figure it out? You're no John Hanna. And that's a guard. And you're no John Hanna. But that was when the running game was still a big thing and Bam Cunningham was a real thing. But now, like I said, if you trade down, you might say, okay, if we take Banks at, say, 13 or 11 or 9, what have you, and can fill other holes, including, watch this, other tackles you may draft that might outperform your rookie or anybody else. That's the other part. If you take Will Campbell, as your top offensive tackle at 4, you know, there's kind of be like, you know, thou shalt not have other tackles after me. Like, you can't be getting 3 other tackles, you know. I thought I'm your guy. All right. At the start of this break here, it's KG on WEEI. You heard Jaylen Brown talk about the importance of Bill Russell to the organization, to the city. If you have not seen Celtic City, I would really have to ask, are you even like New England? Or like now, if you don't have Max and you don't have the ability to see it, that's one thing. But if you have it and you haven't seen at least one episode, you're missing a real treat, especially since all of us watch The Dynasty and you need something to kind of talk about, I don't know, some of the good stuff this thing has done, right? And so I don't want to give this. Well, the great thing about Celtic City, Brian, how many episodes have you seen?
So I'm one of those people who doesn't have HBO Max. Once the playoffs are over, I'll probably, you know.
Can't wait for the playoffs to be over because it's got elements of last year's playoffs in it. Yeah, I'm just kind of mad that they didn't use any of the audio of the damn near award-winning post-game of Game 5 with John Lines and I celebrating and doing a marathon show. I think it was like from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
It was because I was working the morning show that day, and you guys were still going strong at 6 a.m.
Still going, and if it doesn't show up by the time this series is over, I'm kicking something in its teeth. Probably my kid's doll. But episode 7 addresses the stabbing of Paul Pierce. And at the time, I was doing mornings for a station here, WILD 1090, over in Roxbury at 90 Warren Street. AM daytimer, the running joke was, as the morning guy was, boy, it was tough in the spring because, you're only on when the sun was up. And when the sun went down, you turn the station off. So in the winter, it was just like, woohoo, we're all going home at like 3:45. Summertime, you're like, damn, we're still here to 8 o'clock, you know, at night. So that's where I was working at the time. If you know, right off Dudley Station, right down Dudley, as they would say, or people would say, right there, just coming up Warren Street, across from the municipal court, where Gangstar's guru's father was a judge there for years. That's where I was working at the time when it happened. And when it first happened at the nightclub that it happened at, some of us were like, what was he doing there? That's a lifestyle club. Like, Pierce was there, but then it turned out that it was a special event and it was a fashion show party where Pierce is there, Tony Battea is with him, and I believe Tony Battea's younger brother at the time of the night of this happened. So the story I remember at this time, keep in mind this, we're talking 25 years ago, but you're kind of in the ish because you're like, you're waking up, you're like, yo, Paul Pierce got stabbed last night? So if what I recall, the story was like the Battea brothers and Paul Pierce are playing pool together when one of the guys who would then later be arrested, go to jail for, says something to Pierce. But at the time that it happened, the Battea brothers had left, I think, to go get like a couple of beers and left Pierce alone. Because the other part was just like, yo, I thought, why did, we're like, I don't know what that means. Okay, this is just recollection. Okay, so it's a little bit of story time here with KJ. So apparently it was kind of part two of some words that were exchanged between Pierce and some of these guys a couple of days before. And then, of course, it happens at the time. And it happens. And at that time, there was a well-known crew around Boston that was well-known in the streets. You're like, damn, KJ, how do you know all that? Okay. Let's just say they had a reputation of if you had something to say, they would come see you to see if you would say it again. Okay? So about 2 months before the stabbing, let me put this in context. I'm at a after party for a comedy show over in Faneuil Hall. And Brian, as you know, I'm 6'4". I'm a big guy. So much so that like at one point in my career, 3-6 Mafia offered me like $150,000 to be their security. But I was like, this is a true story.
No way. Wow.
So I'm a bigger guy, but I wasn't going to do security because they shoot at rappers. The bodyguard's supposed to stand in front of them, right? So there's this massive dude nearby, quiet. He doesn't say anything or what have you. And I was just thinking to myself, I was just like, this dude is massive. Like, this dude's bigger than me. This, like, yeah, you ever see like 2-bit Rottweilers or big 2-bit pit bulls on chains? Like, this dude was built like that. Well, it turns out that guy would later be arrested. One of the guys arrested for this Pierce stabbing. So at the time of the stabbing, let me go back to the time, a key figure in all of this conversation of what had happened and why was Pierce stabbed and the people that were involved, there's a key figure in this crew, we'll just call him R. But the night of the stabbing, he was in Suffolk County prison, jail, it's not prison. He's in Suffolk County jail for a whole other matter, okay? So clearly he's not the guy, but people are trying to implicate one way or the other. So once he gets out of jail in Suffolk County, he comes over to WILD to do an interview conducted by the kid who started the rap newsletter over at Cambridge. I'll just put it that way, okay? People are like, damn, this guy's bringing out names from the past. So they have this interview with my news person at the station, mentioning that he clearly had nothing directly doing with the matter because, again, he was in jail at the time, right? So within a day or two, a major law enforcement agency in America, that's all I'm going to say, inquires about this taped interview that I don't think we had aired or it had just aired. Like I was like, they could just show up to your job like this and ask for the tape? And I remember my girlfriend at the time, I was just like, no way. The blankety blanks are on the case. It was an absolute surreal time. And what was really, really eerie about it at the time, because I remember there was a high probability that Paul Pierce was not going to recover. I think they said it was just centimeters away from his heart, I believe, was one of the stab wounds. I know the top of the head was one of the areas, if I recall. And Boston's different now. But there was an element at the time that was just like, boy. So if you haven't seen Celtic City, Brian, can you believe I'm sharing that story on the air?
I still can't believe that you were offered to be a bodyguard. That part exists.
Well, I mean,
I don't blame you for turning it down, though.
Well, yeah, because the thing is, depending on like Southern rappers, they are going to always have beefs. So, and Memphis beefs are deeper than any. Now, the crazy thing is, had I become the bodyguard, I would have been hanging like with Paris Hilton and stuff like that and everything. But I don't know. What is that, you know? But then again, I don't know. One bodyguard ended up with one of the Kardashian moms, so there could have been a future in this. Look, hey, I ended up at WEEI instead of making that $150,000 to protect some rappers. And some would say that's a blessing there. So if you haven't caught Celtic City, get caught up for sure, man. It is, it's a masterclass by Bill Simmons on this one. And I think it's going to help the narrative for the rest of the NBA, because I think if the Celtics see Oklahoma City, the Celtics are going to pull off the upset. Not an upset to us, but to the betting world, it would be an upset. And therefore, now you've got a two-time champion. I don't want to jinx anything because you still got to play the first game of the playoffs. But if you saw what happened last night to the Lakers.
Unbelievable.
Oh, Luka Doncic is going to go down as the greatest offensive defensive liability in the history of the league. It's almost kind of like Peyton Pritchard could pick out Luka and be like, come on, defend me, and burn by him. I damn near probably could burn by Luka. Yeah, he is the worst. He is the best, worst offensive, defensive guy. Worst defensive superstar I can remember. And I've seen a lot of basketball in my life. I can't think of an NBA superstar whose defense was this bad.
The only one that comes close would be James Harden, but I still think Harden's a better defender than Doncic, or at least puts in more effort than Doncic does.
No, in terms of, I'm talking about a guy, I hate to use the anatomy, but it's almost kind of like, you're like, what are you liking? What are some of the physical features like? Well, I don't want him to have all one and nothing of the other, or vice versa. That's Luka Doncic. He's got all of one and nothing of the other. You can figure out what that is. 617-779-7937. I got to get on some of this soft culture inside of sports talk industry here next on WEEI.
We're back. It's KJ Carson on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Who do we got here? What's your name?
My name's Lauren.
Lawrence, all right.
And I'm Kayla.
Kayla, and you guys hang out at the Rooftop Lounge often?
Once a year I come out to visit.
Okay, well, we timed it pretty well. All right, I'm gonna go to work up here, guys. Good luck the rest of the way.
Okay, Wiley. You got four innings to get the numbers.
Come on.
Get us some more Braves fans.
All right, so they want me to get your number.
They want you to get my number.
I'm dead serious. They're saying in my ear right now, she didn't believe me because she thinks you guys are not, I'm making this up.
Yeah! Turn it up, Brian! I want some bangs and stuff in stuff to that! And bangs and stuff! WEEI, good Sunday to you. Happy Easter. Still to come. Justin Turpin's going to check in about an hour, getting you ready for the Celtics Game 1 playoffs against Orlando today. The NBA. We'll talk some NBA playoffs as well here in the next hour. And, of course, I've got to get to Belichick running Carolina. And for those who celebrate, is KJ smoking or is KJ cooking? That's still to come, plus the Red Sox with a nice win yesterday and good for Tristan Casas. So what you just heard coming in was a recent Atlanta Braves-Toronto Blue Jays game in Toronto where during the game, the Jemai Webster of the Braves broadcast team is in kind of like the fan zone, and he meets a couple of females that are up there. And, of course, you heard the exchange where they joke about, like, you know, you got a couple of innings to get the number, he's going to go to work and so forth and everything like that. And then here come the pussy willows of social media. If that had happened, and what about the girl in Florida who talked to the plane? Everybody was come. This is the problem. This is the problem when if you get offended by this, so what? This is the problem where you feel like you find love on a phone. This is because this is what a lot of people have gone through now. Like, you don't understand what the exchange between the broadcast guy and the two women who were there was so genuine and natural that it's almost unheard of in the dating scene today. And that's why it's pissed some people off. Because why can't a guy just come to me and just be charming like that? Why don't they exist? I understand the frustration. I'm just not in the game anymore. But what you saw there was classic game. Now, people even misconstrued, well, you said she wasn't a player, neither was he. The false equivalency would have been if he was talking to a WNBA player and pulled that off. And I would just say, just think about that for a moment. But why were you so soft? People are so soft. And here's the other part of it, because, and I'm going to give a little bit of game for those of you who are in the dating world and are trying to figure out, do they like me or anything or not? Body position says everything about, especially when a guy speaks to a woman, body position in terms of when they're exchanging says a lot. So for example, if you're talking to a female and trying to get her attention, but let's say she's got her side turned towards you and you're open, what she's telling you is closed off from you. I have no interest in what you're saying. Back to you, stuff like that, right? You would know if they're back with you. But when they open you face forward, that means they're receiving what you were saying and are interested in listening. And that's exactly what happened when she said, okay, so do they want my number or you're just saying that? And that's what made it even funnier, because it was genuine. And I feel for people who don't get genuine exchanges. Computer love has done that to you. That's why they killed Roger. Bro, you can't be talking about computer love. This is about to be a big business. We'll have your brother kill you. That's some dark humor right there. Double dark humor. But yeah, what you saw on that Braves broadcast that everybody was up in arms about was a natural exchange between, watch this, a man and a woman, boy and girl. He didn't use his position. It wasn't anything. Oh, so people didn't even catch up on the return flirt. Oh, so do they want my number or you really want my number? Hey, come on, you. People so damn serious these days. All right, before we get in the next hour, Brian, I know you're probably not into wrestling or WrestleMania.
Not a huge fan.
But I will say this. If last night was going to be your first introduction into getting into wrestling, biggest event, what an utter disappointment. Now, I'm going to tell my age a little bit. I mean, hell, if I tell you I was around working here in Boston at WILD when Paul Pierce got stabbed, you at least know that I'm over the age of 25. Okay? I've seen every single WrestleMania since WrestleMania 1. And in fact, our tickets were messed up at Madison Square Garden, where my father had bought tickets for WrestleMania, and they messed the tickets up and comped my dad tickets to the next event at the Garden because they'd screwed it up. So imagine I could be sitting in my collection, a copy of WrestleMania 1's ticket. I don't have it. I ended up going like a month later and seeing Hogan in his first title defense. I was able to share that with Hulk Hogan in a men's restroom in Kansas City. Wow, tell your 10-year-old self that Hulk Hogan is going to be standing next to you in a restroom. Like, this is Hulkamania. This is everything that's got you in front of a television. This is bonding you and your father. And you're like, I saw your first defense against Paul Orndorff. Hogan goes, brother, you are old. I'm thinking, how you can call me old when you were the damn guy wrestling? I was the kid at the thing. How old are you? But, of course, you don't want to say that with Hulk Hogan and yourself by yourself in the bathroom and find out someone you're getting leg dropped on a dirty floor somewhere in the Midwest. WrestleMania last night was absolutely trash. Trash, trash, trash. Woo! Woo! I'll watch again tonight. All right, next. The Red Sox. Look, the bats are still anemic, but something good happened. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI. Good.
You guys hang out at the rooftop lounge often?
Coleman!
It's electric!
Your family's tripping. Kid puts a Pop-Tart in the toaster, he's tripping. Daughter turns on the hairdryer, she's tripping. You iron your pants, and you're tripping. Your entire family is tripping circuit breakers all over the house. Well, call Coleman Electric. Coleman believes no one should walk around with a raw Pop-Tart, wet hair, and wrinkled pants. You've got an unsafe case of circuit overload, and Coleman Electric will solve it. Like the outlet in your bedroom, it was wired back in 62 for an alarm clock and a lamp. But now it looks like you're running a power strip club. That's because today, we plug in everything, even our car. Invite the electricians at Coleman Electric over, and we'll figure it out. Maybe upgrade your panel from a 100 to 200 amps, run new wiring, or whatever it takes to get all your circuits safe and up to...
This is KJ Carson on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
The 1-0 pitch. Swinging a high fly into left field. Benintendi back at the track. At the wall. He catches Green. And the Red Sox win it. Casas delivers. Bregman scores. And Boston wins it. 4-3.
Oh, how good does that feel for Tristan Casas? Not only getting the big swing, the big knock, but coming through for your teammates. There's no better feeling. He had a big situation in his last at-bat, didn't come through, got a second chance, and made it count.
Thank you so much for spending your Easter Sunday here on WEEI. It's KJ, 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. And look who's 12-10. For those who have followed or who've been awake or heard this crazy conspiracy theory that I call the 27 games at a time, that is, you really want to judge what could be the success of the team in 27 game clips. So I've said, like, to be on your path to get to 90 wins, you want to at least go 15-12 each one of those spots to get in 27 games at a time. So if you told me the Red Sox in their next five games could go 3-2 and meet the threshold of 27. Like, what? This is absolutely phenomenal considering some of the things that I'm seeing numbers-wise that, like, there's kind of an impression in some of the failure. Let me get to Tristan Casas first and how I'm really thrilled for him that that hit may be one of those benchmarks in his career, which I think will be a very productive one, will be a benchmark in his career because sometimes it's about winning it for others than winning the battle for yourself. So if it was just like, hey, Tristan Casas got himself a hit, okay, that's better to building the story. But his hit yesterday was celebrated. It won the game. He is the center of the attention. He is the reason why they are celebrating. I think someone like Tristan Casas needs that at this time, right? Because let's just say it was a loss and he went, let's say he went 3-for-4 in a loss. The conversation would be like, okay, you look good today, but, you know, it wasn't a win, or you may hopefully it can continue. But I think for him, there's probably this belief now, I can contribute to the team. I think that's, players are kind of like, you know, like, I don't want to let these other guys down. And the same time, because baseball is super superstitious, right? Like, you don't want to, I don't want to say too many words to him. He'll figure it out, everything like that. This is just kind of a reaffirmation that you are of us. And all your quirks and all your things you're figuring out and the things that we've seen you go through, you absolutely deserve this. It's kind of like getting hired in radio. Like, damn, after all those no's, you said yes, a part of the team? So for him, that hit says, I can do all things through my team that kind of uplifts me, right? This is what I give this Red Sox team a lot of credit for. And let's call it what it is. I think Bregman is now truly the centerpiece of the unification feelings that are going on with this team. Just because I think maybe a week or two ago, my conversations about Tristan Casas were like, hey, keep an eye on this. You know, because if he continues to struggle and stretch out and everything, and plus all the talk, like, it's really amazing how, and maybe just because I think video games do this, Brian Frazuco, my producer, do you play, like, MLB The Show or anything like that?
I play video games. I haven't played MLB in years. Okay, I haven't played any of the new ones.
So people tend to put people out of positions. Just because, you know, like, hey, I can put them there because, like, there's this thing called conquest on the game where you'll never go play the field, so you can put Shohei Ohtani at second base. It doesn't matter because all you're doing is hitting. I think sometimes people do that as well when they say, look what Roman Anthony's doing. They need to create a 4A because he's destroying AAA. He can come here and play first base. Like, that's got to be tough for Tristan Casas to hear, right? Because what do you think Tristan Casas was hearing when Bobby Dalbec was standing over there at first? Get Casas up here. He plays first. At least you weren't changing a position. So how would you feel if you're hearing people say, get this guy up here who doesn't even play this position to play my position.
Not to mention Cassis is a guy that there have been trade rumors floated about him for feels like a year and a half now.
Well, not that long, but really in the preseason when there was a discussion of like, would they be able to get one of these frontline starters from Seattle? But, you know, management, Craig Breslow came out and said, no, Tristan Casas is a Red Sox. Where,
yeah.
I will say there is honesty. No, Rafael Devers is our DH. Well, what about when Bregman goes off and he's having a child and he's out on paternity leave for a day or two? Rafi is still the DH. Like, okay, that's good leadership right there because the message is not wavering. And I think fans are going to be fans, right? You're going to, like, it's like putting Ohtani at second. Like, you just can't, like, Roman Anthony is not taking ground balls at first. He's not playing first at Worcester. He's an outfielder. And if this is a loaded outfield, then guess what happens? Either he eventually makes his way up here, or, like, they offer, like, you know, Mike Trout and all of the Angels' first-round picks for the next 10 years. Yeah, you might consider, like, Roman, we love you. We love Teal, too, but, you know, business is business. But, yeah, so for Cassis to probably hear, and again, this is a younger guy who's still figuring out his way, right? Because keep in mind, who's really been the last consistent first baseman for the Red Sox? Think about that. Like, who's been the last consistent first baseman? Right, so Cassis has been informed that you're the guy. And so when you've been informed that you're the guy, the one thing you don't want to do is let down your guys. They're supporting you. And the way they hugged him and the joy that you just saw in his face yesterday, you could probably tell that baseball was feeling a little bit joyless. And not knowing how one cerebrally takes in things, that could be very damaging to what you have to do operationally in the production-wise. Right? So great on the leadership at the field level to remind him that you're our guy. And today's your day. Celebrate. We needed you. Now, it was funny when I was watching the game yesterday on Nesson. Boy, you want to talk about jinxing? Literally, he's like, uh-oh, you want to watch out for this Lewis Robert guy. What happens? Boom. Right over to Monster. Like, maybe you don't say these things. But then again, I'm also one of those people who are like, you know, like, did Katy Perry really go to space? Conspiracy theorists. Do you ever wonder, like, because we see the game on a delay, that they see what is about to happen, and then they say the thing that you're like, how did they say that? And then it happens because they get to see the raw feed, but we're seeing the, I don't know, maybe I'm giving away the secrets of sauce of television broadcasting. I don't know. But I always wonder that because just like, what is the chance that they're like, I would watch out for this guy. But what if he's saying, I would watch out for this guy, but he just saw 4 seconds ago the ball go over or over left field?
You see it a lot with like field goal kickers or like free throws in an NBA game.
Yeah, right. So because we know on this side of the ledger, there is a delay, right? Because just in case someone says something that shouldn't be said over the airwaves, a person can hit a button. And that's why you'll hear like someone just say something incoherent. Well, okay, if there's no delay and there's something incoherent, then it's just probably me talking. But there is still a concern I have for the Red Sox between how bad they look when they lose towards how good they look when they win, right? And keep in mind, it's a two-game different, but think about this. The batting average is almost 100 points less when they lose than when they win. Their on-base percentage is 100 points less from when they lose to win. And their slugging percentage is more than 200 points off from when they win and when they lose. And their OPS, 300 points off from when they win and when they lose. So when they win, they're out there making people look like they're making it look like the Harlem Globetrotters playing around with the Washington Generals. That's a basketball reference. But when they lose, shoot, it feels like Walther Matthau has suddenly become the manager of the Bad New Bears. Nobody can hit. Get in there, Thorpe. Get there, Oglethorpe. So, look, Garrett Crochet is the odds-on favorite to win the Cy Young. And I would say hop on the train sooner than later because every time this guy's stepping out there, nobody's really coming across the plate. Nobody. And so, we already got the Crochet day. You know what, Brian? This is funny. I don't know if you've ever seen this photo, but my mom crocheted me what is like 72 inches is what, 6 feet? So yeah, a six foot by 3 foot. So yeah, so 72 inches by 36 inches. Huge blanket, crocheted blanket of the Red Sox with all the retired numbers and baseballs.
Oh, nice.
With my initials at the top, KJ. I've shared it from time to time, but it is literally my whole entire body. It's my lucky blanket. Please don't retire Pedroia's number just yet. I don't think I've put... It even has the blue 42 up there. So Poppy's number is through... It's up through Poppy's number on there. And now maybe I might talk to Mom. I say, you know, Mom, they got a crochet day, and maybe we bust out Mrs. Carson, Mama Carson out there on crochet day to start crocheting little mini... You're going to have to pay my mom if you're going to do that. But yeah, the crochet day, like the first 100... Well, I don't know if I would give away a bunch of crochet pens and a bunch of drinking. If they scream Sweet Caroline in my ear again, I swear to God. Not with the crochet pen! Crochet needle, that's what they're called. But yeah, crochet day is a real thing for everybody. Everybody. This team has a real chance to get to 15-12 after 27 games and would put them on path to 90 wins. They're only a game and a half out of the Yankees at this point, at 12-10. So good on them. Of course, remember, first pitch here at WEEI. Dan Ball's got the pregame here for you as well. And then, of course, the Marathon Monday game tomorrow at 11, something like that. Something like that. Yeah, about like 11:55, something like that. All right, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. Still to come, Justin Turpin will be here in about 30 minutes talking Celtics playoffs. We'll get to more Celtics. Plus, we'll get to the Belichick video that has people talking at him in North Carolina. And, of course, celebrating 420 today. Is KJ smoking or is he cooking? That's still to come. But right now, it's time to trend. We're primed for SoCo.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. Celtics title defense, that begins today as Boston takes on the Orlando Magic for Game 1 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals today with tip-off from the TD Garden at 3:30 from WEEI's own Justin Turpin, who will be joining us in about 30 minutes or so. Here's Jaylen Brown talking about his knee injury and how it could impact him in this series.
No, you got an injection on the knee. What was the injection and what was the hope for that treatment to be able to do for you?
I'm not here to talk about my knee, guys. It is what it is. I'm focused on Orlando.
Well, that doesn't sound very encouraging. Other game ones today include the Thunder hosting the Grizzlies at 1 o'clock, the Heat visiting the number one seeded Cavaliers at 7 o'clock, and the day wraps up with Steph Curry, and the Golden State Warriors visiting Houston to take on the Rockets. The NBA playoffs got underway yesterday for 8 other teams, with the Pacers taking game one over the Bucks, the Nuggets winning in overtime against the Clippers. You had the Knicks securing an 11-point win over the Pistons at Madison Square Garden, and the surprise of the day with the Timberwolves beating LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and the Lakers in LA 117-105. Garrett Crochet struck out 7, and Tristan Cassis played the role of the hero yesterday as he walked off the White Sox in extra innings to give the Red Sox their fourth straight win. Game 3 of this four-game series is today, with first pitch from Fenway Park scheduled for 1:35, and we'll have the call of that for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network, Shaw's Perfecting the Art of Fresh. Pregame starts at 12:35 with the MassMutual pregame show hosted by our very own Dan Ball. The NHL playoffs got underway yesterday with a pair of Game 1s, the President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets took down the Blues 5-3, and the Avalanche steamrolled the Stars in Dallas by a score of 5-1. Three more games take place today, with the Devils visiting the Hurricanes at 3 o'clock. You got the Senators facing the Maple Leafs at 7 o'clock, and the late game has the Wild in Vegas to take on old friend Bruce Cassidy and the Golden Knights. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. I'm Brian Frisoka, and you got more KJ Carson. That's coming up after this.
We're right back to it. KJ Carson on WEEI.
WEEI.
Any thoughts at all about how it's been going for him down at UNC?
From rumblings I heard, this is not recent, this is a month or two ago, they're not loving the Bill Belichick experience if you're an everyday employee down there, which is probably what a lot of the people here in 2000 felt when they came aboard, when Bill came aboard and said, I don't know if I like this.
Stop smiling,
it's uncomfortable.
KJ Carson here on WEEI, 617-779-7931. I'm totally kidding. It's just a song called 77. It's never good to play a song with a phone number in it and then trying to give out the phone number. 617-779-7937. Play, listen, right. Would that not confuse you, Brian, when trying to say the telephone number?
There's too many sevens in both of them.
There's too many sevens in them, but seven is a key number for Belichick and his program at Carolina. Now, you'll hear me call it Carolina. I graduated from college in North Carolina. My family is from North Carolina. So I speak more of the jargon of calling it Carolina versus UNC. Right. So as you heard Ted Johnson and with Tom Curran discussing the Belichick experiment and how it's going. And of course, it hit some of a crescendo this week when the video was released of his lady Jordan right there on the field as spring practice was occurring. And I'll say this. Belichick is kind of playing chess with the Jordan Hudson situation at his side. While others are trapped in a checkers mentality and retracing all how the steps trace out and how the bad jokes early on that I told about the two of them together. But look, I said it was going to work out. Some people thought it was a fling. I was like, no, this is going to work out because how many 72-year-old guys have someone in their 20s that look good, say yes to them, and be with them, and you know why she's with them. I'm a boy and she's a girl. Hello, what else would it be? You think it's money? Because now we're in the opportunity portion, and here's what Bill is doing. You know how we joke about how Bill, if you catch him in a mistake, you'll never catch him in that mistake again. I think if there's one mistake that Belichick may cop to a bit from over the years is his lack of media savvy and how to be proactive about it. And he was almost never reactive to it. So with the situation at Carolina, for those say UNC, he has an opportunity really to kind of run a media operation and kind of do the coaching thing kind of in his sleep. Right? Like the media is never going to attack. Trust me. They're not going to be a bunch of hard-hitting journalists from Channel 11, WTVD, asking Belichick the hard questions in the locker room. No, they're just going to just be happy to have Bill Belichick to be a subject matter here in the local Raleigh-Durham television market. For those who are confused, Raleigh and Durham are two different towns. Two different towns. That's why it's not called Bull Raleigh-Durham. Two different places. Okay? So Belichick is kind of the star at a school that's historically been a basketball phenomenon. I'm going to tie all this together. We really don't pay college basketball that much attention here, but what's happening in the college sports world is, got a really good football program that brings in money? You can get yourself a really good basketball program. You got yourself a really good coach in Bill Belichick and get some football money coming in? Now you can get the basketball program going back again. But for some people, Bill Belichick, the hero, has died in their eyes. It's almost like a sad song. Because think of all the hairy hard asses who acted like they drank from the Belichick protein shake fountain every morning. They believed in the philosophy. They tried to carry themselves. This is how Bill do it. Most of these guys fall into the category of somehow they suddenly got into like high school coaching. I believe in Belichick. Your hero's died kind of for you because you can't pull off what he's pulling off now. And it makes some angry because it reminds them how Belichick was fired. Team is no better than when he left. And at least he'd be four games closer to Shula. So there's some people who fall in that category. They're like, man, I'm seeing Belichick out here with his girlfriend out there with North Carolina matching jacket and high boots, the 50-yard line, walking up towards players and then walking back to Bill and talking to him. Like, this is just, you're like, man, this is why Bill should probably still be here. If it was going to be this bad, might as well kept Bill. And there are some who are kind of jealous. Like, they could relate to him dating someone slightly younger, like the last one. You know, the one who was kind of like in her last days of her smoke show. You know, those type. But Bill changed it, flipped it, dropped the remix on all of us, and went 50 years younger. Who amongst us can do that? Legally. And deep inside, you cheer for the guy, but you can't do it out loud because the artist formerly known as the smoke show in your life is looking at you and wondering if that's what you want too. So here's what's crazy about the situation with Belichick at North Carolina. He has more control than what he was perceived to have with the Patriots. Think about this. Is there anybody that's going to tell him, no, I can't trade a Tom Brady here and keep the Jimmy G that I want at North Carolina? No. He has a person in charge of how they do their NIL spend. Belichick is in the perfect situation for him. So I don't believe that there's this discontent for him because guess what? He hasn't failed at the job that he's been hired to do yet. Like, how can you say they don't like him there yet when he hasn't even coached a game yet? Like, I hate to say this, but source? No, like there's going to be a general happiness that the school's basketball team that usually carried the news and can't do it anymore has a news story now. So I don't know where the reports come from. Like, they don't really like it there. They don't really like him there. I think what that really stems from is, and this falls under the "a hero has died in my eyes." A hero has died in some people's eyes seeing Jordan Hudson out there on the field with Belichick chilling during practice. You can't even say that's not even the Patriot way because Belichick just told you in the book that's to come, and Shaughnessy reported, the Patriot way was all made up. It's not a Belichick thing. So you can't even say it was the Patriot way. Damn. It's like learning about Santa Claus when you're 16. What? No. But I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus every year as a kid. What happened? That's how some people feel like with Belichick. Belichick is doing his thing. And here's what's even funnier about all of this. The North Carolina football team is going to be the story of college football this year. Not just because of Belichick, but because of Belichick. He recognizes that there's a media presence that's about to swoop in. Why do you think he was doing Pat McAfee every week? Why do you think he was doing the NFL today, or whatever it's called, the show that almost nobody watches? It went from like HBO to like UPN. Belichick has taken his time to get himself media savvy, and now he even has someone who controls his own media. If you've seen The Dynasty, and I don't know who hasn't here, think about the face you saw on Belichick towards the end of that series, where pretty much he's discussing what is his perceived recent failures while he's still the head coach of the team, just to see at the end a Kraft Group Productions. Belichick may have told himself, whatever I do moving forward, I'm going to make sure I control the narrative and not have anybody force me into a situation of telling a story that I don't want to tell and have to be there because of my employer. That's why Jordan Hudson's out there. This makes double sense. Like, so if you really thought that, Belichick's just got this, I don't know, that's not even a midlife crisis. That's like an end of life crisis. But again, this is all playing out. It makes perfect sense now. And people are like, well, she's in the email and everything like that. So what? If your heroes die to you, then realize that your hero, watch this, is a mortal man. And yeah, you might be angry that Belichick was gone the way he's gone because you thought it would last forever. Nothing does. I'd be jealous too. Shoot. Gosh. You're probably looking at that significant other thinking about, man, remember we used to listen to Extremes More Than Words and sit under the sunlight Now you're like, turn the light off. That's wrong, Cajun. But here's the thing. Belichick has a chance to win double-digit games in this first year just because he's gone to the ACC. So I present a feature called, is KJ smoking or is he cooking? Hit it, Brian. Ah, yes, because it is April 20th for some of you. Knows exactly what's going on. And like, slow down and eat something first. I present, are you smoking, KJ, or are you cooking? I will give statements. You will hear a sounder from my producer if he thinks I am smoking or I am cooking. Let me start with Belichick. Bill Belichick and North Carolina will win the ACC this year.
What's Labrador?
I'm not smoking when I say this. The over-under is 7.5 wins. The wins? Charlotte, Richmond, UCF, Virginia, Syracuse, Stanford, Wake Forest, Duke. The losses? TCU? Ah, wait a minute. Not so fast, my friend. TCU is the opener on the road. This is the Hello World Bill Belichick game where everybody's like, wow, look what he's doing with North Carolina. Another loss? Clemson. Do you know that there's 2 weeks to prepare for Clemson? Because there's no game for North Carolina between September 20th and October 4th. You're giving Belichick all that time to prepare for a team? You see the madness? So, like, I don't think that's a loss. At California, 13 days to prepare for Cal. No game between October 5th and October 17th, the day of that game. And at NC State, guess what? Their last game of the season at NC State. The previous 2 weeks, North Carolina would have traveled a total of 104 one-way miles to play games. Rested, near home. All the games are in the state. Carolina goes 11-1, with Cal being probably their only loss because of the travel distance and the emotional high after beating Clemson. All right. So you think I'm smoking for Zuko?
Look, I would love that to happen. I'm rooting for Bill. I think it would be a great storyline. It's great for us to talk about because we don't really talk about college football much here. And I think if Belichick gets North Carolina to respectable, you had him at 11-1. I think that'd be great for us.
That's called national championship competitive.
I just don't know if a coach can make that big of a difference to come to an organization at like Carolina that I think is devoid of talent, much more devoid of talent than schools like Clemson and some other schools in the ACC. I just don't see it. I think he's going to give them a boost. I could see 8 wins. Hell, I could even see 9 wins. I think 11 is a little strong.
Let me ask you this. Who wins college football games? Great coaches or mediocre players?
I think great play. I know this isn't answering your question. I think great players in college football. So I guess
okay, so between Georgia that won all question, those championships with great quarterbacks?
I think the rest of the roster was stacked. You look at the defenses Georgia has. The entire Georgia defense is now in the Eagles.
My
who just
point
won the Super
Bowl. Being is, he did I say that Georgia's not on his list? He's not playing Alabama. He doesn't have to go up against, I don't know, Texas. He's not. If he went to the SEC, it would be an embarrassment. But by going to the ACC, I'm not smoking when I say North Carolina could go 11-1 just because Belichick will have the chance to prepare for two of his toughest games. He'll get 2 weeks of preparation. And I would say, who is the best at preparing for their opponent if given extra time in all of football? It's Bill Belichick. All right. Shedeur Sanders will be taken top 5 of the NFL draft. Is KJ smoking or is KJ cooking? Oh, man, that's good, man. That's what I'm saying. I'm cooking because don't sleep on Cleveland. They've been extremely quiet. And because they took Joe Flacco on a one-year deal, what that tells me is they may be ready to say, Deshaun Watson, you can sit out these 2 years. We can do the buyout now. Go get ourselves a rookie quarterback that we know will excite the fan base. And if it doesn't necessarily work out great, we'll have a great pick again next year. Watch out. Cleveland may still take Shedeur Sanders. It's not like he hasn't worked out for them.
I would agree, and I think you look at the two teams above the Patriots, obviously Cam Ward's going to the Titans, but if you look at Cleveland and the Giants, both of them have head coaches who I would argue are on the hottest of hot seats in Stefanski and Dable. They need a quarterback, a rookie quarterback, I think, to, even if they're only going to win 6-7 games, they can go back to ownership and say, well, look, we didn't win a lot of games, but we have a rookie quarterback who's going to get better in his second year. He showed some promise because of us, because both those guys are offensive-minded coaches. I think both of those coaches need to just show something for the future to keep their job. So I'm with you. I think either, whether it's Cleveland, whether it's the Giants, I think one of those teams is going to draft a quarterback and probably be Shedeur Sanders.
All right, sticking with the draft, is KJ smoking or is he cooking when he says the Patriots will take Will Campbell at 4 if Travis Hunter is still on the board?
Labrador.
You know, the question is, you heard Travis Hunter say if he can't play both sides of the ball, then he doesn't want to play. I think you can get away with a statement like that with a Cleveland. I don't think you get away with a statement like that with the Giants. So I think what Travis Hunter is trying to position for himself is to negotiate more playing two-way than being drafted as, say, just a standalone cornerback or a standalone receiver. So I think they take Will Campbell at 4 if Travis Hunter's still on the board, or they trade that pick down. So I guess what I'm saying is that if Travis Hunter's available at 4, the Patriots don't take him.
I think just going to be too much backlash if they pass on a generational talent or a perceived generational talent. So I think whether it's Carter or whether it's Hunter, if one of those two guys drops to 4, I think the Patriots are just going to feel the fan pressure and have to take one of them.
Yeah, so Charles Woodson also won the Heisman playing both sides of the ball in college. How many sides of the ball did he play when he got to the NFL?
Just one.
Just one. All right, next one. The Celtics will get taken to 6 games by the Orlando Magic and lose a game at home. Is KJ smoking or is KJ cooking?
What's Labrador?
Yeah. 4 and 6 are not, they're divisible by 2, but definitely 4 does not go into 6. I agree
with half of your statement. I could see the Celtics dropping one of these first 2 games at home. I don't see the series going more than 5 games, though.
No, the Celtics won't lose at home. If anything, they may do the gentleman sweep where, okay, we win up both at home. We lose game 3 on the road, and then we win 4 and 5. All right, next. The Patriots will take 2 running backs in the draft. KJ cooking, KJ smoking.
Man, don't feed him, man. Man, that's good, man.
Yeah, buddy, yeah. Ramondre Stevenson, you're on the clock, bro. And I think Josh McDaniels is going to at least get a receiving running back. And I think you're going to try and get another big body back as well to spell Ramondre Stevenson. So 2 running backs there. And that is KJ smoking or is he cooking today on April 20th? Justin Turpin joins us next. We'll talk more Celtics before I get out of here at 10 here on WEEI.
It's KJ Carson on WEEI.
Thank you for spending your Sunday here on WEEI with KJ, 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. Missed any of the show? The Audacy app is free, AUDACY. Click WEEI and hear everything said by this guy. If you missed it, I think that's becoming a running joke right there. And of course, the Alexa device. Say, hey, Alexa, play Boston Sports Radio. You can listen to your home. We're about 10 minutes away from Dan Ball. He'll also take you up to the pregame for the Red Sox game 3 against the Chicago White Sox. Before we bring Justin Turpin in talking Celtics, we talked Belichick and him at Carolina, North Carolina, UNC, however you want to say it. I was able to share a little bit of my Celtics story regarding the stabbing of Paul Pierce back in 2000 when I was working at a station, WILD, over in Roxbury at the time, and all of the information that was going on, and share a little bit. You can hear all that by rewinding on the app, AUDACYWEEI. KJ is the guy. All right, let me bring in our Celtics insider here on WEEI, and a guy I am proud to say I knew him back when. That Justin Turpin's getting so big that while I know he owns a boat, I'm wondering if he's going to invite me on his yacht after the NBA Finals. So, Justin Turpin, thank you so much for being here, man, and it's always good to have you, my man.
Always. My pleasure, KJ, and you know you'll be invited on the yacht. Whenever we get there, we're still a ways away.
So that means you put the down payment on it, huh? I see.
No,
so,
not quite yet.
So, look, playoffs start today, and I think for a lot of the fan base, it feels like, okay, now the season really starts. And I think the question mark that we all have is, you know, how healthy is Jaylen Brown to give it a go? Do you think this is going to be similar to what we dealt with Kristaps Porzingis last year at the start of the playoffs?
I think it would be a little bit different, only because Kristaps was severely limited. Like, Jaylen Brown's probably going to be limited, but not as limited as Kristaps Porzingis was, to a point where Porzingis was coming off the bench. Like, Jaylen Brown's going to be in the starting lineup, and he's going to play near 30 minutes. And all week long, the testimony from his teammates, and he didn't really comment on it yesterday. It was his first media availability in 2 weeks, and you know he really declined to comment on the knee. But all week long, we've heard good reviews from the coaches, from his teammates, and everyone seems to think that he's in a good spot and is ready to go. But he hasn't passed that 30-minute mark since March 12th against the Thunder. So we're going to see if he can take on his whole load. I'm also wondering if Joe Mazzulla tries to ease him in a little bit. Maybe they try to do keep him near that 30-minute mark, because I think you'd agree, KJ, I don't think they need to push him in this series. I think they probably could have won this series without him anyway. So there's really no need to go all in and tax his body and tax his knee here. But, I mean, they're not going to take it for granted. They're well aware of what's ahead of them and the challenges of repeating. I mean, there have been six different champions since the Warriors repeated, and the previous five haven't made it out of the second round. The Celtics are well aware of that, so they're not going to play with their food. But I also wonder if they're looking at this as the long game for Jaylen Brown.
You know, I think this season, what I'm going to take away the most has been how dominant they were on the road. Now, even granted, they've got home court advantage until if they see Cleveland. But I think what you're getting at in terms of, hey, maybe if you do kind of restrict the minutes on Jaylen Brown, you have confidence in the other guys stepping forward. Do you believe that the bench and the role players have a stronger presence this year than they did last year?
Oh, 100%. I think a big reason that they were able to get to 61 wins, even with that December-January swoon they had, was because of guys like Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser. I mean, those guys are just so much more comfortable, more confident than they were a year ago. And I think last year's playoff run really helped Pritchard especially. I mean, look at the big shots he had last year. I know everyone's going to think of Game 5 against Dallas when he hit the half-court shot right before the half, but he also had a big shot in Cleveland. I think that was in Game 4. He had a big shot in Game 2. I think it was against Dallas. Like, he made big shots throughout the finals and throughout that playoff run, which was just big for his confidence going into the next year. And you see him just playing more freely now. I think last year, even after he got the contract extension, there was a lot more comfortability with his role. He wasn't playing as pressured. He was just playing more relaxed because he had that backing. He could go out and just play his game. And he's been huge for them this year. And he's going to be a big key for this because he struggled a little bit against Orlando this year. It's not really a great matchup for him just because they do such a good job taking away the perimeter. They allow the fewest three-pointers at the lowest rate. So it's been a tough go for him, but they're going to need him throughout this playoff run. And like you said, I mean, they're a big reason for the success.
Got Justin Turpin here on WEEI. Before I get out of here, we're talking Celtics. Of course, the game today with Orlando. You can kind of – so let's throw out one of the losses that the Celtics had to Orlando. Like 60% of the team of the scoring didn't play in that game. If there's one thing that concerns you about Orlando, and if there's one thing that doesn't concern you about the Orlando for the Celtics, what would those two things be?
Yeah, I think there's a perfect stat that encapsulates both of these, my concern and my non-concern. First, so – Orlando was held under 100 points more than anyone in the NBA. They cannot really score the basketball. Then again, they held opponents under 100 points more than anyone in the NBA. So we've seen they can do it. Like, their defense is great, their offense not so much. So when I'm looking at that, I'm looking like there's going to be like 10 to 15 possessions that really decide this each game in the series, because all the Celtics need to do is capitalize when they go scoreless. Orlando is going to go scoreless for an extended stretch. That's just the reality of this team. They struggle to score the basketball. When that happens, can the Celtics capitalize? Can they build a big lead? Can they make a run? If they can go on a 15-0 run, whatever it may be, Orlando doesn't have the firepower offensively to punch back. So that could really put it away. Like, if they build a big lead on just a quick run, 4 or 5 minute run, the game could be over in essence because they struggle to score the basketball. So I'd look at their defense, their length. We've seen these teams that are physical and have good length give the Celtics problems in the past. I mean, look at the last 3 years against Orlando. Boston's 4-6. They've struggled because of their length, because of their physicality. But I think more of that's on the old iteration of the Celtics. You can throw out definitely one of the losses against Orlando this year. Like you said, the entire top six sat. And in the first game as well, Jason Tatum was out. And yeah. he was a last-minute scratch. So you can kind of put an asterisk on that one as well. So I'm not totally concerned about this, and my pick, Celtics in five.
Okay. Okay. Well, then you answered one of my questions. So you say Celtics in five. So we could probably agree, if the Celtics can get out to a quick lead, let's just say they can get on maybe one of these 17-5 runs to start the game. Do you think that kind of solidifies what they need to do in each one of their games? Or are you concerned that if the Celtics get held to close to that 100 number, that means that things have gone too well for Orlando?
Well, I think that's the one game they're going to lose. I think it's inevitable that Orlando's going to have a great defensive night and the Celtics are going to struggle from three. I mean, we've seen it this season. Like, they haven't done a great job against Orlando on the perimeter this year. And obviously, like you said, you can throw out one of those games and Jason Tatum's out for another. But even in the game they blew him out and won by 20-something, they still took a lower amount of threes than they usually do. So I look at the three-point battle and, like, they're going to have inevitably a game where they don't shoot the ball great from three. And you also got to give credit to Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, who have been terrific recently with their scoring. So I think that mixture there of Boston having a bad three-point shooting night or a bad shooting night in general, with Paolo and Franz getting going offensively for a game, will steal Orlando a game. So I think you just got to prepare for that. Like, this team, 41-41 might not be the best number. Like, obviously it's their record, but that might not be indicative of who they really are. They were
because they had some serious injuries during the course of the season, right? Yeah.
Bizarre ones, too. Two oblique injuries for Paolo and Franz. Like, it was weird. And they were eight games above 500. They dropped to six below, mainly because of these injuries. Obviously, still without Jalen Suggs, without Mo Wagner, who was one of their best scorers off the bench. So, yeah, I don't know if the 41-41 record is really indicative of who they are. Now, granted, this is a team the Celtics should take care of business, but they are probably better than people give them credit. Like I said, eight games above 500, they dropped down to six below, mainly because of injuries. And I think for a little while there, they figured out ways to win while Paolo and Franz were out, and then that kind of luck ran out a little bit. But no, I wouldn't overlook this team entirely, right? This is a series the Celtics should win, but this is one they're going to have to work for.
Justin Turpin, thank you so much, man, for being here today. I appreciate you anytime you come on. And what a 24 hours of glory it will be if the Celtics win this afternoon and still laughing about Lakers and the Luka Doncic defense experiment, as bad as they look last night. It can be a wonderful 24 hours, man. Enjoy the game today. Go Seas.
Awesome. Thank you so much, KJ. Good to talk to you.
You too, Justin. All right, man, I'm out of here. Dan Ball's next. I don't want him coming in at 10:02, but this would be his opportunity to, like, grab some fast food real quick and giving my next guy an excuse to come in a little bit late. Again, missed any of the show, the Odyssey app is free, and of course you can listen to WEEI at any time. Tell your Alexa device, play Boston Sports Radio WEEI. Have a great Sunday. Enjoy your Easter. See ya!